Now, let's talk to a man whose musicianship was profoundly shaped by Nadia Boulanger, the wonderful pianist Robert Levin, who has been heard throughout the United States, Europe, Australia, and Asia in solo and chamber concerts and with major orchestras. He is particularly renowned for his restoration of the classical period practice of improvised embellishments and cadenzas, a skill he attributes to the rigorous foundation laid by Mademoiselle Boulanger. In addition to his performing activities, Robert Levin is a noted theorist and Mozart scholar. Upon his graduation from Harvard, while still in his teens, he was invited by Rudolf Serkin to head the theory department of the Curtis Institute of Music, a post he left after 5 years to take up a professorship at SUNY Purchase outside of New York City. In 1979, he was resident director of the Conservatoire Américain in Fontainebleau, France, at the request of Nadia Boulanger, and taught there for 4 years. After teaching at the Staatliche Hochschule für Musik in Freiburg, Germany in 1986 to 1993, he returned to the United States to become the Dwight P. Robinson, Jr. Professor of the Humanities at Harvard University. Hello, Robert Levin. Thank you so much for taking a little time to talk to us about your studies with Nadia Boulanger. Tell us first at what stage of your development you studied with her.
I arrived at Fontainebleau in the summer of 1960 when I was 12 years old, so it was quite a tender age.
12 years old. That's extraordinary. And how long did you study with her? What kinds of things did you work on at that age?
I worked with her from the summer of 1960 through the summer of 1964, and I also worked with her in Paris during the year 62-63, and I started by working on harmony and composition with her, but those studies spread to analysis, counterpoint, fugue, and, of course, keyboard harmony, which is one of her awesome strengths. And, of course, one really didn't study so much all of these individual skills with her as one studied music in its broadest and most spiritual dimension.
So she would talk about the essence of music even to young people.
Well, I think she had a particular fondness for young people. She had a history of working with young people. For instance, the Turkish pianist İdil Biret, whom she worked with in the 1950s, when İdil was, I think, around seven, we became good friends during the time that I was in Paris, too, and she worked with the son of the cellist, Pascal Tortelier. And she then worked with a whole bevy of younger students during the time I was in Fontainebleau, and the last of her child prodigies was Emil Naumov, who is presently teaching piano at Indiana University.
Yes. And you studied organ with her also, did you?
I did. That was at my own initiative in the final summer. I thought, well, I might as well try to get as much out of my studies with Nadia Boulanger as I possibly can, and therefore every time you signed up for an additional subject, you got an additional private lesson. And so, in addition to my theory and composition studies, that way I was able to get an extra private lesson a week with her, and it was quite extraordinary, I must say, studying the organ with her, because first and foremost, she got me from absolutely nowhere, having never sat down at an organ in my life, to playing some of the more challenging chorale preludes of the Orgelbüchlein by the end of the summer, in Dies Freude, which has a memorable pedal obligato, sort of vamp figure, which was my despair, which was a kind of a running joke between me and some of the other organists. But above all, she used it to exact the most extraordinary kinds of coordination exercises in which, amongst the five fingers of each hand and your feet, she would sometimes ask you to do something like seven or eight different rhythms to essentially bring your brain to the edge of complete breakdown. It was quite something.
Wow. Would you say that her teaching style was more pushing or pulling?
I think it varied a great deal with the individual with whom she worked. I think it has to be stressed that although Nadia Boulanger had a tendency to use a certain limited set of materials in her theory teaching, when it came to doing creative work, and I mean here composition, for instance, in particular, she did what she said she did in her interviews, which was she worked very, very much from an extraordinary perception of the personality of the student. And the more she trusted that student, the more likely she was to allow that person a free range of fantasy. She says this in a remarkable book that was published by Bruno Mont-Saint-Jean, the television producer and violinist who also did the film on Glenn Gould. And Mont-Saint-Jean asked her all sorts of questions, which after her death he wove into a seamless narrative. And she says that what you have to do is to allow a student to find her or his own voice and to be utterly ruthless in matters of discipline. And that key statement of hers concords absolutely and exactly with the dedication that Paul Valéry, the poet and philosopher, wrote on a picture of himself, which stood on Nadia Boulanger's piano in the winter in her Paris apartment and in the summer at Fontainebleau. And what that said, rendered into English, was to Nadia Boulanger, to her who ordains enthusiasm and discipline.
A lovely tribute and statement. She had a unique, obviously she must have had a, what I think of as a magical, unique ability, which made her such an extraordinary teacher. And would you say that much of it was because of her insight into each student's particular strengths?
It certainly had a lot to do with that, but the ability she had to see inside the character of a malleable and developing young musician and intrinsically grasp what they did best and further that, all of that would be extraordinary enough without what, of course, is key to all of this, that is, all of the insights into character, as wonderful as they may be, will not produce the legacy that makes her one of the greatest teachers in human history, were it not for the nature of her understanding of the musical process and for the fact that she, as a deeply religious woman, who, of course, was the product of a French Roman Catholic and a Russian Orthodox princess, that her faith was so, so deep on the one hand, and her knowledge of and contact with the leading philosophers of the day, all of these things melded to make her understanding of music a synthesis of culture, intellect, and spirituality in the deepest dimension. Simple facts like the tracing of the bass line in a Bach prelude could reduce her voice to a hush. She would crack at the idea that after a long period of standing on one tone, when finally the tension broke the dam and the bass moved to its point of resolution, she would play the sound of that note finally reaching its resting place. And you could hear, cracked with emotion, an attempt somehow to go on and make palpable to all of us what an extraordinary event this rather simple act of physics was, and how in the largest sense it wrote all of our destinies and mirrored it. And seeing a woman of her greatness with the knowledge that she had, able to, in fact compelled to, react in these humble, hushed, overwhelmed tones to something like this, represented for me, certainly at the impressionable age of 12, but I dare say some of the other students who were up to their 40s and 50s, a design for living, which I think is what art really is, isn't it?
That is very beautifully said, and yes, it certainly is. That's a wonderful way of describing it. On the other side of things, I understand she could also, though, be very impatient with people. Is this true?
Well, she could terrify people. I knew some of my fellow students who popped tranquilizers before they went into any session, because if she had no patience with people, if she felt that they were untalented or that they had not worked up to their full potential, she would belittle them, she would shout at them. When she would ask me to do some of the things that she asked, perhaps not of everybody, but she certainly asked them of me, that I would have to read the full score of Stravinsky's Symphony and Psalms and reduce it for piano at sight, or take some frightening Hindemith piece, and she would play the left hand when I was 13, and I had to play the right hand at tempo jumping all over the keyboard, she would not only start to shout at me, but she would take those bony fists and sometimes punch me in the ribs. And that's a particular session that I remember very well, because finally it reduced me to tears. I mean, after all, I was 13 at the time, and I was close enough to childhood that I could crack in ways that older people would not. And this, of course, was not a weapon for my PF. It was just simply despair. But it reduced her to abashed tones of enormous embarrassment. She said, "Oh, come, Bobby. No, you must not behave like this. No, you know I love you. It's impossible." And so then somehow we would get started again, and a moment later she would be shouting and punching me again.
Oh, wonderful. Tough
it
love.
Well, it's not for nothing that Don Campbell and others have referred to her as the tender tyrant. She had both of those elements inside her, and one has to understand that with royal blood coursing through her veins, she was not a Democrat, and she had a very, very clear sense of things that were right and that were wrong, and she could be merciless with her put downs, just as she could be full of humor, engagement, and a touching kind of childlike way of working with people when the circumstances seem to her to make that the right way to behave.
Robert Levin, thank you so much for giving us these wonderful insights. It is a very special treat to have you on.
Well, it is my pleasure, and also it's a privilege to try to bring to people some of the extraordinary genius and inspiration that this woman brought to me and thousands, literally thousands of young musicians from the United States, from Poland, from countries all over Europe, from South America. It is a legacy which I think will live on in all of us who care so deeply for what she did and try to pass it to the next generation.
Good. Thank you.
I think this is a good time to hear one of Nadia Boulanger's songs. We'll hear Soir d'hiver, Winter Evening, which was written in 1914. The poetry is her own. I'll read it to you. A young woman is rocking her child. She is alone. She cries, but she sings. For he needs to hear the song, sweet and tender, for him to fall asleep. Christmas has come, my little blue child. The bells will ring for you to be cheerful. The one she loves has gone away, and the song stops. She says, "Where is he at this time? Does he hear my voice, and does he know I am alive?" She weeps so simply that the heart aches. She looks at her son and searches whether he resembles the one for whom she waits untiringly with all her soul, with all her tender love. But she weeps, but she hopes. She hears the victory from afar. She anticipates the fight without mercy. But she believes in justice. She knows that a whole life has been given, joyful and proud, and she waits beside this cradle so small, which holds the heart of a man.